One of the most common challenges you'll face as a fundraiser is taking over a caseload that's been managed by somebody else. Whether you're starting at a new organization, taking on a new role, or simply adjusting caseloads internally, it can be challenging to know how to pick up the thread so that the relationship with the donor feels seamless and transparent. For this episode, I've invited my colleagues, Diana Fraser and Matt Gill, to share their tips and strategies for what to do when you inherit a caseload so that your donors feel cared for and you can continue to grow those relationships. I hope you enjoy the conversation.
Welcome to the Nothing But Major Gifts podcast from Veritas Group, featuring Richard Perry and Jeff Schreifels. Twice a month, we bring you the latest and best thinking about major gift fundraising so you can develop authentic relationships with your major donors. Here are your hosts, Richard and Jeff.
Welcome to the podcast today. I'm Matt Gill, and Diana and I are taking over the pod to talk about what to do when you inherit a caseload. First off, quick intro, who the heck are we? My name's Matt. I'm a flying experienced leader here. I'm also in the Navy Reserves, and I occasionally teach at the University of Minnesota. Way back in the day, I was a client of Veritas. Diana, do you remember that?
Yes, I do. I remember it well.
glad I was memorable. It was a really, really impactful experience for me, and I'm glad to be on this side of things. Diana was my coach for everyone who's out there. Diana, who are you?
Who am I? I am Diana, Diana Fraser, also on the Veritas team, been a client experience leader for quite some time, and I get the title senior, so you can do the math if you figure that out. Live in Philadelphia. I am a runner. I love my dog, and I love reading. And I love working with fundraisers all across the United States and Canada. So let's just jump in. Let's take over. Go ahead, Matt.
Let's do it. Happy to be here with you. So what we're talking about today, we're talking about inheriting a caseload and what to do. So I know there's lots of ways that you could end up inheriting a caseload, either, you know, a part of a caseload or a full caseload. So I think what we should probably start this conversation off with, you know, discussing some of the scenarios and what you might need to keep in mind if one of those scenarios applies to you.
True, Matt. Like there are two, if you think about it, there's two basic scenarios. You're either a new hire or you're new to the role in the organization and you're taking over a caseload from somebody else who held that role, or you're absorbing part of a caseload from somebody has left the team and they're taking that caseload and they're carving it out. So those are kind of two different roles or scenarios that might happen with you do it. There are definitely some considerations. If there is overlap with the other fundraiser, take time to capture as much as you possibly can in the CRM. Now, there are a couple of reasons people don't want to do it. They think they don't have the time. They don't think it's that important. Could be they didn't keep good records themselves either, wherever they scribbled things away and they're having a hard time, you know, recompiling it. But this is a really critical thing. If you're a leader on listening to this podcast, part of your role of the exit of somebody leaving your team is to carve out time on the calendar where they're going to sit and do that. They don't have to do it alone. They could do it with somebody there. I've been in a situation where the person told me stuff and I scribbled furiously and recorded. The point being is it's so, so important. And I know this firsthand because I walked into this situation in a university. I walked in the door. Not only were there no notes, I kid you not, there wasn't even a pencil in the pencil drawer. There was nothing, not one thing for me. So I had to, as best I could, learn about donors by looking at everything possible in the CRM. And because it's a university, we're infamous for those basement filing cabinets of the alumni. So I went down and I grabbed 10 folders at a time and I tried to reconstruct a history as best I could. It was painful and it made my process getting to know donors a lot longer than it needed to be. So ideally, you're going to get that. The other thing you want to talk about is a warm handoff. And what does that mean? You want to use this where there's somebody who can actually do the introduction for you. It can be the gift officer who's leaving. If they're able to identify the top donors and you're overlapping by 2 or 3 weeks, if that's wonderful, if it happens, and that person can introduce you by email, phone, Zoom, face-to-face, whatever you can make happen. That is going to be the best possible handoff, but maybe that's not at all achievable. So maybe a leader can step in that role. Maybe the vice president of your department or the president or executive director of the organization or another key leader in the organization knows those donors. They can facilitate that. The reason you want to do that is that kind of gives you immediate legitimacy with a donor. And also when you're having those meetings or calls, you're not yet a subject matter expert in that organization if you just walked in the door, right? So there's somebody who can also do the color commentary, be the subject matter expert and really help you through that. And if you are doing an email handoff and you're the gift officer leaving or you're the executive director doing the intro, I know you're going to think I'm crazy for saying this, but please be sure to copy the new fundraiser on the email. I've seen it happen. Email goes out to introduce them and the poor person's not even included. So that's just something that throw that in for free, folks. Matt, what
it
are
almost goes yeah. without saying. It almost goes without saying, but we're saying it.
We're saying it because we've seen it. That's, yep. You're hearing the truth here, folks. We see it all. So Matt, what are some of the things you need to keep in mind at the beginning part when you're inheriting a case? So what have you encountering? What have you seen?
Yeah. And so, you know, taking over a caseload, a lot of times thinking about the different scenarios that you just talked about, you know, what might be the protocols for an introduction to the new caseload? You know, what do you know about the donor? What's the donor's history been with the organization? What's been decided with regards to the various handoffs that you're going to do? If it's going to be a warm handoff, if it's going to be, you know, who's going to be doing that handoff, how much time has gone by between the last contact with the organization and you, you know, that's kind of the first consideration. You know, what's the introduction protocol? And then, you know, how are you going to use the previously assigned fundraiser? And sometimes, you know, like in the scenario where they're still around and you've got the opportunity to have these joint visits or you were able to download a lot of the information from the previously assigned fundraiser, then that's a great resource. And sometimes it's not terribly appropriate, frankly, because sometimes people leave under inauspicious term circumstances.
Big word there, Matt. Big word. Inauspicious. Yeah, love it. Love the vocab.
you all know what I'm talking about, and or there could have been a poor experience that really needs to be addressed with the donor and. And some trust needs to be rebuilt. So like not all donors get along with all fundraisers and what? Vice versa. And right, you know, we're all human beings. And sometimes personalities clash. Sometimes, you know, other things happen. And, you know, and certainly there's a lot of repair work that needs to be done when that's the case. You know, and so let's talk about that real quick, Diana. You know, thinking about coming in behind a fundraiser that maybe had a troublesome relationship with a donor, that it definitely colors that donor's experience with the organization. You know, thinking about how to address that. In my opinion, and I think you'd agree with me. You know, we want to meet this kind of head on.
Yep.
I'm brand
new. Put it
right
out there.
Yeah, like I understand that. You know, in the past, there's been some things that have happened, and let's talk about it. You know, just to put it on the table and use that opportunity to improve or repair, even reset their relationship with the organization. Some of the language you could use, you know, we've spitballed a couple of little phrases just now, but you can even throw stuff in your intro letter. You know, I'm sure let's say you're the fifth fundraiser this person has been assigned in the last 3 years. I'm sure no one listening has ever had that experience. You know, throw in the intro letter, you know, I'm sure this is frustrating, you know, to have your contact here change this frequently. But I look forward to learning how I can help repair that, help build your trust, help continue to, you know, deepen your connection to this organization and try and move from there. Right.
Yeah. You're really trying to meet them emotionally where they are. There's no point in pretending that they're not frustrated.
Right.
So name it, meet them, and move forward to be positive.
Yeah. And, you know, even talking about if there is those negative circumstances in which the previous fundraiser left their previous relationship manager, you put a positive spin as much as possible. You know, the good news is that we're able to move forward, or even just you can share they took a different role at a different organization, or you know, oftentimes it's they took a growth position somewhere else or took a growth position within the organization. And that's, you know, that those are positive things. And the donor is, you know, is they want to know, they have a relationship with the fundraiser, but their primary relationship is with the organization they're investing in. And also, it can be tempting to, when you're trying to put a positive spin or you're coming in and you're really excited about your new job and they're frustrated because you're their fifth fundraiser in 3 years, to say, well, I'm here now, don't worry, I'll be here for the foreseeable future. And let's be honest about what the foreseeable future actually means. Like, you can't promise something that you don't make promises you can't keep there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, moving into kind of other procedures for taking, like, what was, you know, thinking about the caseload, you're coming in, we would want to have this gut check on that caseload. Who's relationally qualified? Who, no kidding, has had two-way communication and is interested in that kind of a thing with the organization? And, you know, as you'd want to assess that for yourself as an incoming fundraiser. That's your first, you want to just verify, you know, in that first introduction process cycle, you know, are these qualified donors in this qualified caseload? Are they actually qualified or not?
You know, Matt, that's an incredibly important point. And I can give you an example right out of my own history as a gift officer. I had a donor assigned that was assigned to me and had been assigned to a previous person and had given a substantial gift, but it had been a while. But there was no, I could see no evidence of anything going on with this donor, no ongoing communication, nothing. I talked to my vice president. I talked to other people on the team. Nobody seemed to know what I was talking about. That should have been a clue to me that nobody seems to remember this donor who gave, I think it was like $25,000. What's going on here? I happened to bring it up with the chair of what we called our annual fund. And she goes, oh, Diana, they're not a donor really to the university. They gave because of my husband. It's one of those things you give to my charity and I'll give to your charity. Thank you. After spending hours trying to solve this and calling, writing a letter and calling and leaving messages. And the person's probably thinking, she's wild. She doesn't understand. But it's that kind of thing. That's exactly what I mean. You could be chasing something that is ephemeral because you didn't do the gut check. So real life story, telling you like it is.
Love that. You know, I'm thinking about you telling your story there. It reminds me of a client I had who, and this is relatively common, I think, they booked pledges. They often asked on a five-year cycle with reunions, and they booked pledges, and they would book it in the year the pledge was made. And then it looked like in their data that the donor hadn't given for like 4 years before it was time for them to reunion and then pledge again. And that can impact, that kind of data can impact how you approach a caseload. Like, oh, shoot, this guy, he hasn't done anything for like 4 years. Do I even introduce myself to him? And, you know, that's just like, it's kind of a nuance that, you know, that as a leader would probably have to pass down to a new fundraiser. As a fundraiser, you'd want to notice and try, and, you know, it'd be something to keep in mind as you're inheriting your caseload.
Yep, exactly.
Speaking of leaders, Diana.
Yes.
you're hiring your new fundraisers, and you want to set them up for success. You desperately need them to be successful, right? So let's talk about some ways you can set up your fundraiser for success as they're coming in on day one. So I think looking at giving a caseload to your new fundraiser, you know, really be realistic be open and honest and realistic with the fundraiser with the situation they're coming into. What's the caseload been doing? You know, are the donors qualified or not? Are, you know, who's active, who's not active? Are these people we're hoping this new fundraiser will re-engage?
Right.
Or, you know, is the fundraiser expected to go and find some donors to, or find some sort of prospects to bring into their caseload?
No, no.
You don't want that. You know, but be realistic and honest and make sure those expectations, especially in year one, are grounded in reality.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we've never seen this scenario before where a fundraiser leaves, their caseload sits for a little while, and maybe that tier A, those top 10% of donors get picked out of that caseload and farmed out to other fundraisers, A, because they can't be left alone for as long as it takes to hire a new person, and B, because they're great donors and we all want to have great donors in our caseload. So, you know, back to that realistic comment before, you know, is the caseload as robust as it was when it was left from the old fundraiser? And in giving that caseload to the new person, you know, are they being set up for success?
Right.
One last thing to think about as a leader, you know, if the fundraiser is new to fundraising, we see this a lot, people coming from sales, people coming from marketing, people coming in from the corporate world, from other places. I think even people coming in guns a-blazing, just raring to go, both the leader and the funders need to be patient with how long it's going to take to get to know donors, to move that relationship forward and to come to a place of trust with the caseload. As leaders, you want to make sure they get solid training if they're new to fundraising. You know, Verist Gift Academy, of course, is a great resource. There are others. We, you know, and don't always assume that the transferable skills or experience are always going to work, or they're always going to relate, or always going to be true. There's lots to learn that's specific to fundraising. And, you know, and be honest about that and be patient as you learn those. Make sure, you know, new to fundraising folks, they may not know what they don't know. Leaders, yep. Slow down, explain things, and then focus on, you know, there's the process part and then how that relates to the money expectations part of the role. Anything to add there, Diana?
Other than just to restate it, somebody's skills, while they might be transferable, they're not exact. And you really want to pay attention to that and make sure that the new fundraiser understands fundraising and the way you go about that.
Love it. Thank you. So let's talk, I guess, maybe some tips, some best practices you've seen, Diana, when a fundraiser inherits a caseload.
Well, a lot of it's in that communication when you're getting started with them. I will say there's a tendency to default to email when you're taking over. I think we get in our head, oh, that's going to be fast. That's going to be efficient. And one thing you'll hear Verita say all the time, we're not asking you to be efficient. We're asking you to be effective. And effective isn't fast necessarily. It gets faster over time. So think about your first interaction. We actually, if you're doing a letter, which we think you should start with, because a letter is something people tend to hold on to when we get less personal mail, but customize that letter and hand address it and do those things that you would do just like if you were starting a qualification process. Make some reference within there. I just worked with someone today. She is a new fundraiser, taking over a caseload that was left fallow, if you will, for 9 months. She's taking the time to mention the other person's name within the letter, so that the donor saying, oh yeah, they haven't forgotten me, or they're not stupid. They didn't forget somebody reached out to me before. Taking that extra time, and yes, it will take more time to craft those letters, is highly effective. Now, the exception is if the donor has clearly said in the record they want email, not letters, then obviously you go to email. And you want to customize it. As I said, customize it just like you were at the beginning. The other thing that's happening there is it shows the donor that the organization knows who they are, even if there's been some transition in their point of contact. And that's a critical piece. Donors don't want to feel like they've been forgotten, nor should we forget donors because there's a transition. And I would say do these in groups. Do not walk in day one and suddenly whip out, you know, 150 intro letters and wing them across the United States. How do you do that follow-up? So do it just like if you were starting from scratch with a new portfolio, do them in rolling batches, because whatever letters you send out, you need to be following up to set up phone or Zoom or face-to-face meetings to try to get that engagement. So if you send out 150 letters on one day, you're not going to be able to do the follow-up for all 150 people the next week, and those will kind of grow stagnant while you're doing that. So just you know, again, be effective. That's, we're wanting you to be effective, not efficient. The other is take this opportunity to reuse a survey or questionnaire tool, even if the donors had it in the past. Maybe it was sent to them and never replied. You can use all of that in your note, in your cover note with it. And you can say something like, I know you've filled this out before for Matt a few years back, and I can see that, but maybe your interest or your communication preferences have changed. So I'm giving this to you now. And that sets the, that answers the why now. Why are you asking me to do that? The other thing is the pressure around solicitation. And there's two parts of this. One is the fundraiser's angst that we sometimes bring to it. And we feel like we can't ask because we haven't met the person yet. And while I understand that on a certain level, the thing fundraisers have to remember is the donor knows the organization. They know they're a donor. So don't shy away from connecting in if that's when the donor prefers to give. And you can say something as simple as, Matt, I'm sorry we haven't connected yet. I did see that you typically give in the spring, and I wanted to make sure I engaged with you or reached out to you, or, you know, whatever language you want to use to give you that opportunity to give now. Use this as a way to show the donor that the organization knows them and their giving preferences. So again, it's about building that trust that no matter who the gift officer is, it's the organization that the donor's ultimately connecting with. Matt, I know you have something along these lines you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, you know, I actually worked at an organization where the one of the senior leaders had been there a long time and had just a lot of donors. And, you know, they'd been there, they'd managed a bunch of these folks. And when they ultimately left, the interim who came behind them said, whoa, there's no way I can manage all these. They probably didn't need this many, or shouldn't have been managing this many donors. We got to kind of farm this out.
Well, there is that.
Right. That's one issue. That's not what this podcast is about necessarily, but like, we got to farm these donors out to the team, and let's give 5 here, 10 there. And it became this, oh, these are so-and-so's donors. Like, these are their board members. They're important people, as if they were totally different human beings invested in the organization from the folks who were on our caseload already. And there was this intimidation factor where, in some cases it felt like I need to have something real important to mm-hmm. call this person about, or this person is someone whose name is relatively famous in town. How are they going to respond to me calling them? And so there was this intimidation factor because of the previous relationship manager had this elevated role and had been in the organization for so long that it kind of it impacted the way that some of us reached out to those folks when we inherited them. So make sure Thanks. That doesn't
yeah.
happen.
So really get in the right mindset right from the start. If you're an established fundraiser, sometimes they can get lax over time and they get to know the donor. That can lead to a loss of context and information. We hope that's not true. If you're an established fundraiser, document, please. It honors the donor. It honors the mission. Get away from the mindset that it's my caseload or your caseload. It's the organization's caseload of donors. And it's a group of people. Mm-hmm. Caseload can sound kind of clinical. It's a group of people who have invested in your mission, right? They want to see a preferred future from whatever you do. So honor that. And imagine who may have to come in behind you. It's a very important thing. Whatever you're doing, someday in the future, somebody else is going to be in your role. And do you want to help that person or hinder that person? And even maybe more important than that, do you want to help that donor continue to have a good experience investing in change for your organization? Or do you want to hinder your donor by making this gift officer ask the same 6 questions for the 6th time that they had a new gift officer? So I'll stop beating that horse. Thank you for joining me, Matt. This was fun. And we hope you all get some great tips on how to manage inheriting a caseload in a way that honors your donor. If you'd like to learn more about strategically managing your caseload, I highly recommend that you join us for an upcoming session. It's our certification course in either mid-level fundraising or major gift fundraising, either one. All of our upcoming available sessions are listed in our website under training or in the show notes. Thank you, take care, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us for the Nothing But Major Gifts podcast from Veritas Group. Richard and Jeff also write an ongoing blog that you can subscribe to for free at veritasgroup.com. Please join us again next time.